On this episode, ClearEdge CEO Leslie Vickery interviews Lisa Maxwell, founder and managing partner at Gerard Stewart, an international recruitment firm specializing in executive and C-level talent recruitment. Lisa shares her passion for staffing CEO, board, and presidential level roles and fills us in on the new C-level role organizations are looking for, as well as how executives can continue to grow in their careers. I hope you enjoy this episode.
All right, today I am joined by Lisa Maxwell, the managing partner with Gerard Stewart. Thank you, Lisa, for being on today's podcast.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
So we've worked together now for a couple of years, and I'm going to test your elevator pitch now. So for the listeners meeting you for the first time, in less than a minute, tell us a little bit about Gerard Stewart.
Gerard Stewart is an executive search firm I founded almost 12 years ago. We focus on the human capital space, meaning staffing, RPO, MSP, HR outsourcing, and we do executive search for CEO and board level candidates primarily. We also do compensation consulting, CEO succession planning, and we provide board services.
Okay, fantastic. Well, you passed the test, so great job. It's clear what you do, which, you know, a lot of companies struggle with. So I also want to just note, you mentioned you started the company nearly 12 years ago. You're actually coming up on your anniversary here in June. So we started our firms around the same time, you a year before ClearEdge started. And before that, you were with Lucas Group for nearly 7 years. And I think something that you and I have in common is that we each service the staffing and recruitment industries, and we have for a really long time. So tell me, why are you so passionate about filling the C-suite at some of our industry's largest firms? And how did you get started in the recruitment industry?
Well, probably not too different from you, Leslie. I worked for a search firm, and I actually recruited four staffing companies while I was with Lucas for 7 years. But I saw a gap in the staffing industry for a search firm that focused on CEO, board level, and president level positions. There are obviously a lot of recruiters that focus on recruitment for the staffing industry. And then obviously there's the big retained firms like Spencer Stewart and Russell Reynolds and Egon Zehnder, but none of those big retained firms had a focus on staffing. They have consumer practice or technology practice, retail, but none of them had a practice focused on the staffing industry. And there were a lot of recruiters that recruited for staffing, but none of them had sort of that same executive level focus. So I created Gerard Stewart with the vision of a C-suite search firm that focused on human capital staffing, you know, RPO, MSP, sort of the broad employment services space.
Okay, and I know, you know, over the years, you've seen probably some shifts and changes in the type of roles that you're working on, I guess, for the different clients who are hiring. And as we know, there's a lot of titles and roles that are new. There's chiefs of staff, heads of talent acquisition within the staffing company itself. So maybe share with us a new role that you've seen more and more staffing firms are adding. So obviously we know about the C-suite itself. So, you know, you've got the CEO, the COO, CFO, and so forth. But what's maybe a new role you've seen coming, and what do you think is the driving force behind that?
Definitely, without any question, the chief talent officer or chief people officer would be the role that we've seen emerge in the industry. And it's interesting because one of the things we saw happening over the last 10 years has been the shift in the CFO role from a purely financial driven position focusing on reporting what's happened, you know, financially to companies, particularly staffing companies, wanting a CFO who has more of a strategic mindset. And the same thing has happened with the human resources or recruitment function, to where a CEO needs a business partner who has a focus on the people aspect of the business, where not only are they focused on recruitment, but they have an overall strategy around culture and retention and an overall perspective on people. And so we've seen a lot of staffing companies, and obviously having the title, you know, of chief people officer sort of defines it, that this is a C-suite position. It's critical to the success of the company. And obviously staffing, more than any industry, is a people-oriented business. It is the essence of the industry is people.
And it seems like I would agree with that. And it feels like when companies hire for that position, they're sending a serious message out to the company as well, just that employment branding is so critical. But there's also a huge increase in the amount of effort staffing companies are placing on recruiting their own talent, so their own sales reps, their own recruiters, and having that role. I would agree. It seems like the most critical. So I'm happy to hear that more and more staffing firms are adding that at that level. Now, you spend a lot of your time on the client side, so working closely with companies, so the board or the executive team, on their hiring and who they're looking for and their hiring needs. But let's shift for a minute to the candidate mindset, because obviously you also partner with candidates to get placed in those roles. There are a lot of up-and-comers in the industry within staffing, and, you know, a typical path, I guess, a career path would be recruiters to sales to market leader to regional leader, could be, depending on the size of the company, then division president to then ultimately CEO. So for those just starting in their career in staffing, what advice would you have, or what should they do early on in their career to make sure they're managing it effectively to kind of land that top job? What advice would you give those as they're looking at kind of growing within the staffing industry and have that view or vision of the C-suite in mind? What should they be thinking of now?
Well, there's no question that P&L experience has to be there to become a CEO. So if you've gone very far down the sales path, which is a good career path, but it's not a CEO path, or you've gone very far down the operational side of things, you know, you're going to only go to a certain level. And not everybody's meant to be a CEO, but if you want to be a CEO, you need to have that balance to manage a large P&L. That would be one thing. Having said that, a CEO needs to be sort of the brand ambassador for that company. So they need to have a very strong sales capability. In other words, if, you know, I find a lot of the CEOs we deal with, they're still involved in pitching for large, you know, contracts. I mean, they get involved with that relationship piece for large customers. So if you're sitting in a room or around a boardroom, you know, it needs to be very obvious that you are as good of a salesperson as anybody in the room. There needs to be a feeling that you have that capability as the brand ambassador for the company. So I would say those two things are probably paramount. And then, you know, obviously you need to balance it out with good financial acumen. If you don't have CFO experience, you need to take some sort of additional executive classes in the financial side of the business, whether you go back and do sort of a, a Harvard business program, or, you know, there's a lot of different schools that offer classes around those type of things, but you definitely need to have a financial acumen as well.
Yeah, I would agree. Growing up in the industry and marketing, I remember back in my Experian days, I had met with HR and they said, you know, to continue on a career path, you really, what we're going to do is put you in a program where you spend time in HR, you spend time in finance, you spend time in sales and operations, and really learn how to run the business and the different facets of it. But it was an executive who I worked with who had said, I know you're in marketing and you're not managing a P&L, but I want to teach you what that means and what it is, and kind of took me under his wings mentor-wise to educate me on that. And I think that that really helped me, obviously, now being a business owner, wearing that hat. But I think back in the day, I didn't understand how valuable that was, which I guess brings me to my next question for you. So there are a lot of these up-and-comers, and, you know, some of them may not think to reach out to someone like you or an executive recruiter for coaching or help or guidance as they're trying to work their way up in their career. And, you know, not that you spend all of your time, you know, mentoring people and so forth, but maybe you could share an example of where you kind of helped coach someone for years and then they were ready for that CEO role.
I would definitely say, that there is, and this sounds somewhat self-serving, obviously, because I am an executive recruiter, but just, you know, overall speaking, it is valuable to keep in touch with recruiters because we have insight into the broader landscape of the industry in which you work. And I've had, you know, several CEOs, people that are CEOs of major companies now that I talked to 10 years ago who really saw the value in returning my call and sort of getting perspective on the industry as a whole, not because they were interested in making a move, but they wanted to hear from my perspective what was going on. And it's surprising that a lot of the more senior level people are as likely, if not more likely, to return a call because they understand the value of it. And I do think that some people earlier on in their career tend to get a very small and narrow focus in terms of their career, in terms of their company they're working for versus sort of looking at it broadly. So I do think it's a good thing to get in the habit of. And then just in terms of people I've built relationships over the year. There's one in particular who is now a CEO of an IT staffing business who I've known for over 15 years. And the first call that I made to this person, you know, she was really hesitant to make that move from the company she'd been with her entire career and ultimately decided to do so and actually became a chief sales officer of the company I placed her with the first time, and then went to a bigger company. But ultimately, one of the things that led her to being a CEO of the company she's with now, she took a risk of becoming a CEO of a smaller business that company was spinning off. So it gave her that first chance at a CEO of a smaller business, which really positioned her to be a CEO of a larger business. So I think you have to take some risks in your career in terms of positioning yourself for a bigger CEO role, because oftentimes you may work inside a big staffing company and you continue to take on more responsibility in terms of the P&L, and you might manage a $500 million business, but you don't have all of the skills you need to be a CEO. So when that CEO search comes open, companies aren't going to think of you because you haven't had to drive the strategy around the business. You've executed on a larger strategy of the company. You haven't had to go out and acquire a business and develop relationships with banks and be involved with integrating your firm into a bigger company or integrating a company. into your firm. So I do think you have to take some risks.
So flipping it, I guess, for a minute from those people who are kind of working their way up and taking those risks, let's say you're now in that CEO role, and there are a lot of really strong up-and-comers, you know, people who are willing to take those risks early on and throughout their career, kind of nipping at the heels of the C-suite, you know, ready for that opportunity. What advice would you have for executives just to make sure that they stay relevant and don't get too comfortable in their roles? Obviously, results speak volumes, but what type of advice would you have for people?
They need to keep a broad mindset in terms of not looking at things within the landscape of the company that they work for. And there's nothing wrong with finishing your career. You know, there still are people out there that spend their entire career with one company. That's not, you know, it's not a mistake to do that. However, you do need to sort of be involved with the broader industry for which you work. So go to industry conferences, develop a network with your peer group outside of your firm, blog, write for the industry, get yourself out there to where you're on panel discussions at conferences, get up, you know, develop a talk and have a viewpoint on things and do things like this, you know, contribute to the industry in a more meaningful way, because whether you end up staying with your company or not, it does keep you relevant. And it continues to expand your brand, and it keeps you challenged.
I would say if you were to look at, we're going to look at both the hiring side, so the companies you work with, but then also on the executive side and advice that you have there. So the first on the company side, so thinking about what you just mentioned, the critical mistakes companies make when hiring key executives. So what are some of those things that you see? So if you could share maybe the top 2 to 3 things you see companies do that are mistakes when hiring key executives.
I think the one I see the most is not doing a thorough search for their next key leader. Even if you have an internal candidate, it is wise to look at options externally and internally to make sure that, you know, the purpose of a search isn't necessarily just to find the candidate. It is really to help you get a broad perspective on the industry and go through a decision-making process to make sure that you have the right person for that job from a culture perspective, from a leadership perspective, for a why perspective, meaning why does this person want that job? You know, that they actually have a real desire to be in that role. And I found that to be true, that you might have an internal candidate that just sort of, you know, is in the right position at the right time and they have all the skills, but maybe they don't really want it. Maybe they don't want to deal with all of the complexity given their, you know, being in that C-level position. Maybe they like where they are, you know. So there's, you know, I think that doing a thorough search. The other thing I see is companies hiring somebody who is what, I mean, this may not sound great, but what I would call low-hanging fruit, like hiring somebody because they're available.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they've been laid off, people know them in the industry, and it's sort of like, oh, well, they're available. Well, available is not always your best option. And you would be surprised at how many companies hire people because they're available and it's easy. And the other thing is, along those same lines, is I would say not aiming higher. And, you know, we've placed several people in the last few years that were real long shots, that when the call was initially made, it was sort of like, I can't believe we're actually making this call. Is this, would this person actually even be interested in this job? They're managing a billion-dollar company right now, and this job is managing a $300 million business. Why would they be interested? But taking that chance to go for the more exceptional candidate that is the right fit for your role. So those are some of the things I would say that companies make the mistake. And, you know, one more thing is I'm just thinking about it is just, you know, getting sort of, you know, on the end of a search process, getting cheap about their mm-hmm. compensation. You know, I've seen people lose a candidate based on a $15,000 sign-on bonus that they would have to give them because they're leaving money on the candidate's leaving money on the table.
I just literally was talking to someone yesterday. All three of the points that you've made completely resonate with me as a business owner and looking at hiring as well. And I think sometimes I heard someone the other day, actually it was Jeff Harris from Attain. He was speaking at Executive Forum and he made a comment. One of the things he covers is, you know, loyalty doesn't necessarily mean longevity, and or that's why you should be, you know, promoting or rising someone up necessarily. So just because they're there or they're internal or it's easy doesn't necessarily make it the right thing. But just yesterday I was having a conversation with someone and had challenged them to say, you know, talk to the one executive who I knew would be fantastic for the role, just have known them for a long time. And then just compare that conversation with the right candidate to someone you're just kind of putting into the position. And to your point, it's, yes, this person's going to cost a little bit more money, but they're going to get you what you really need. Instead, you may cycle through candidates. You're going to have the wrong fit. So you're sacrificing a really important position for maybe that $15,000, $20,000, and it just doesn't make sense. And you know it when you talk to the right candidate, like that's the right fit. You should fight for that. So I really appreciate that advice. So we're going to shift for a minute here. You know, you and I both have talked about this. We're both very passionate about, obviously, women-owned businesses and supporting women in technology and staffing and business. And ClearEdge, we've sponsored the Women's Luncheon at TechServe for the last probably 10 years in a row. We helped launch Executive Forum's first luncheon that they did a few years back. And I always thought of staffing, you know, I was in a lot of meetings where it was mostly men as a male-dominated industry. And I remember hearing someone at one of the luncheons say, wow, look at all these women. There are so many women in the industry, where have they been? Why aren't they more vocal, and why am I not running into them? And I think one of the observations was that there are a lot of women kind of in the rank, so to speak, and also in mid-management, and that there's a tremendous opportunity for women to move higher in the C-suite to president and CEO who are, you know, very well qualified and who want that type of position but maybe aren't putting themselves out there. So I'm going to ask you, there are obviously stereotypes that we hear, you know, where women are more loyal and less likely to move companies than men, or they don't negotiate salary, or they won't apply for jobs if they don't 100% qualify. Maybe you can shed some light on this opportunity for women to move up and what advice you would have for them in doing so. And I think the one piece you said earlier, taking that risk, is certainly one of those pieces. But what else would you add to that conversation?
Well, first, I would say the shift is happening. I mean, we are seeing it happen. And I do think this next generation of executives, that this is going to become less of a conversation. Because I do think it's shifting, and I'm, you know, happy to be in the generation of women that are making that happen, and thrilled for people like you, Leslie, who are at the forefront of that change. I would say a couple of things. One, the story comes to mind of a CEO candidate that we placed just recently, who was we were negotiating her salary, and she was going to be taking a step back in cash compensation for a pretty significant equity situation. However, we were pretty far off in terms of what the company wanted to pay and what she wanted. And when I say pretty far off, I would say we were off by about $200,000 in salary. So it was significant. And she got, you know, she sort of was negotiating and pushing for her position, and she got fairly aggressive, I guess is the word for me, on the phone about it, with good reason. And we got off the phone, and I was getting ready to dial to call the client, and she called back. And she apologized for being pushy and said, you know, I hope I didn't come across the wrong way, and I really want this position. I don't want them to get the wrong impression. And she really toned it back. And I was fascinated with that conversation because I've never had a man do that, ever, in all the years I've been doing this. And I've had men push very hard for their position in a negotiation for compensation and push me pretty hard, but never has one called me back and said that. And it really made me, you know, brought it to my awareness of how women view being assertive in that way. That was very profound to me. And then the other thing I found is that, for example, if I'm doing, you know, there's a lot of women that want board work, and I'll find that if a man is looking at a board position or wants board work, he's more likely to, I mean, a lot of times there's conflicts of interest in terms of their current position and the kinds of boards they would sit on. I found that men tend to look at it a little bit like, well, that wouldn't be a conflict of interest, or if it is, this is a way we could work around it, while women have been much quicker to back down and say, no, I wouldn't want to do that because that would be a conflict of interest in terms of my current role, and I wouldn't want to step on any toes or, you know, in any way offend anybody. So a man, and not that you should do something that would be a complete conflict of interest, but I found that men have been much more willing to figure out a way that they can still do both, while women have been much more quick to back down and sort of look at it from a perspective of, I don't want to put either, you know, put anybody in a bad position or offend anybody or give a false, you know, sense of, you know, my current position, you know, my day job.
So funny, and maybe you're telling the story of me, but I called you.
You're one of them, yeah.
A couple of years ago, and it's so true because I remember calling you. A client had invited me to join their board, and I just felt conflicted with it just because it was a client, and a lot of our clients compete. But in this case, they didn't really compete with any of our clients, so it wasn't really a conflict of interest, but I remember calling you for advice, and you gave me a very specific example and of a man in the industry kind of doing something similar, and that has always stuck in my head. As soon as you gave me that feedback and shared that example, that, you know, just to kind of shift the thinking a little bit in the way in which we do things, and like you said, you're not going to do something that really is a conflict of interest, but just to, you know, where I would actually think about it, someone else maybe not. So that was good feedback. So excellent. All right, Lisa, thank you. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and transition to a little fun here. Most people in the recruitment industry typically have a crazy story to share. So this could be an interview gone wrong to a hire gone wrong. Share with us your favorite crazy story.
My favorite crazy story of the industry. Let's think about that for a second. What would be sort of a crazy, crazy story?
Can also be one you've heard before. I was moderating a panel at TechServe, and a recruiter had shared with me a story about finding out the address of a candidate and knew that the candidate loved dogs. So he literally parked down the street from the candidate's home, and the candidate wouldn't return his calls or emails or anything. And he kept walking by the guy's house with the dog and then actually ended up placing this, like, happened to run into him, met him, oh, you're so-and-so, I'm so-and-so, and ended up placing him. And I was like, wow, that's really taking it to the next level. But that would be an example of one I've heard. So it could be one you've heard as well.
Well, I would say just one of them that happened to me, I don't know if this is, you know, quite as entertaining as the dog story, but one of the things I would definitely say that companies would could value from thinking about is just looking at some of the not so obvious choices, because I think the tendency is to look at the obvious choices, and a lot of the better placements I've made over the years have been the not so obvious choices. And an example of that is we did a CEO search for, it was about a $100 million light industrial staffing company in the Southeast, and we were really struggling to find, they really wanted somebody out of that, you know, kind of space, and we were having a really hard time and finding the right person. And we ended up going to an outsourcing firm, and I sent an email to a guy just sort of as a, you know, as a sort of desperation almost, just sort of like trying to recruit this particular candidate. And he sent me an email back, and he said, is it $1 million package? Because I would only leave for $1 million package. And anyway, so I ended up, I got back to him. I said, yes, it would be, you know, or kind of, I mean, stretching it a little bit, but yeah, it would be $1 million package. And anyway, so I ended up getting on the phone with him, and turns out that he was a personal friend of the current, the CEO who was going to be moving on, who was looking for his replacement. He was a personal friend. He had never thought of this guy as a potential candidate for his search because he knew him personally. So before we went any further down the path, I called the client and said, hey, this is the guy I called. And he said, oh gosh, I'd never even thought about him. You know, he's a personal friend of mine. I golf with him on a regular basis, but hey, I'll meet for him for coffee. Anyway, they met for coffee. It turns out that this guy had the exact skill set they needed for that job. And he was, had been a, you know, a personal friend of this client for many, many years. So sometimes the right answer is sitting right in front of you.
You don't even know it.
But, you know, again, having said that, I mean, one of the things that probably led them to ultimately being able to hire him, which, by the way, he's turned out to be a great fit for this company, is the fact that we did go through a thorough search process, and we looked at a lot of candidates. So they really, you know, refined what it is they needed. So by the time he got to this particular candidate, he had a real clear vision of what he wanted that he didn't start out with at the beginning of the search. So going through that process helped him actually hire that person. And it's turned out to be, you know, a really good fit, but it was very unexpected.
I could sit and talk to you forever. I have so many more questions, but I know in the essence of time, I will say thank you. You've shared a lot on this podcast that I know for myself, and just advice that I share with clients looking for executives and on their team, but also candidates. You really have brought a lot of things to mind, and, you know, things that stand out to me is just doing that full search and how that makes sense. And then also, you know, even promoting from within, I think sometimes you do that because you know the person so well, and you think as the executive, you're kind of doing them well or a favor or doing good by them by promoting them, but they may not want it and then feel pressured to do it. So you've brought up a lot of interesting points. And I think for the next generation of leaders in our industry and the up and comers, the feedback that you shared about what they should be doing and how partnering with an executive recruiter and getting that coaching and help and guidance is really a smart move in building those relationships, especially as over the years when, you know, companies turn to you, it just makes you think of them. So, you know, the more the saying, you know, if you aren't seen, you can't be heard, I think stands out here is, you know, you really need to make yourself known and be relevant throughout your career. So, Lisa, thank you so much for joining us today. How could people get in touch with you if they wanted to follow up directly with you? What's the best way to reach you?
Well, obviously, I'm on LinkedIn, and I think all my contact information is on there. But, you know, they could email me or call me. My email address is lisa.maxwell@gerardstewart.com. Or they can call me at 404-949-0391. But I would say the easiest way is probably just find me on LinkedIn and link in with me.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm sure all of our listeners will get as much value, if not more, than I did as well. Just really appreciate your time and the expertise you bring to the table and to our industry. So thank you.
Thanks, Leslie.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode. If you enjoyed this podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. Simply search Clear Edge Marketing in the iTunes search bar or click subscribe on the Clear Edge podcast page on clearedgemarketing.com.